TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of the 602 Club. I mean, Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise show. With me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I've just got a little advice for our listeners today before we take off. If you're one of those people that listens to podcasts at higher speeds, I really advise you not to push this one past 2.1x because, well, bad things could happen.
I'm sorry to say that the intermix is a little bit off right now with the podcast episode. So if you do go above 2.5, you may find some destabilization that happens and our voices may begin to crack as though we were in puberty again. So do not listen to the episode at that speed. Absolutely. And I do have to say, Chris, it is quite phenomenal, actually, to be here in the 602 Club to record an episode of Warp 5 because, you know, Ruby is supplying all of the drinks and pretzels that we need.
Well, actually, Matthew, I think a podcasting best practice tip would be not to eat pretzels while you're recording, talking into a microphone.
Oh, right. Because they're crunchy.
Okay, not just crunchy, but drying out your mouth.
This is true. This is true. I mean, that's what the beer's for, Chris. You know, so anyway, no, it just it's so much fun to be here because one, you know, maybe before we get into anything else, you know, obviously we've had the mention of the 602 Club, but if I'm not mistaken, as we've been through this series, this is actually the first time we visit the 602 Club mm-hmm. extensively.
That's right.
Which is such a fun thing because, you know, they really model this after where the test pilots would go in New Mexico, and which is, I believe, the Happy Bottom Riding Club, if I'm remembering correctly. And so I think this is a genius idea. Like, this is this little bar that's, you know, next to Starfleet headquarters, and it's this place where all of these people go and have a drink after their shifts and, you know, complain about the things that we all complain about, what your boss is doing.
Right, right. And then your boss shows up and sits down for a beer with you and you feel awkward.
Yeah. No, that I loved the way that scene was played specifically because it's absolutely the way things go, especially if you don't have a relationship kind of that you're where you're close to your boss at all. You know, the moment they sit down at the table, it's like, oh, so how are things going with you? The weather is great here. That's Thanks right. for sitting down. Can I buy you a drink?
Yeah. Oh, all right. You know, the Happy Bottom Riding Club sounds like it could be a place in rural Nevada. And yeah, just saying. All right, so let's get on with this episode, everyone. We are going to be talking about First Flight. We're getting very close now to the end of season two in our 20th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise. This is the 24th episode, and here's a super quick rundown. Having learned of the death of fellow Starfleet Captain A.G. Robinson, Archer begins to reminisce about their days together in the NX program, pushing forward the warp engine, getting to warp 3, and staying on track as the Vulcans tower over everybody and try to stop humans from heading out into deep space. He also shares with T'Pol how he first met Trip Tucker, and also how AG meant so much to him and is the reason why he is out here in space now commanding the Enterprise. So, Matthew, that's the basic story. But, you know, the key point for me with this episode is really about humans pushing forward, taking risk, not letting the Vulcans hold them back. And then also the way it fills in the background of Star Trek in a way that really gets us away from space. And it really shows us what it was like to try to take those first steps, which is something that I always thought would be a great thing for the series to do, but for various reasons, didn't really show us that because we really take off into space right there at the beginning. So what are your first thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I think that you said that well. And you know, it's well known that one of the original concepts for Enterprise was to have the show actually take place on Earth the majority of the first season and for them to be getting to Earth. I think this episode, to me, was always proof of concept in the idea that the time period between Zefram Cochrane hitting Warp 1, the Vulcans coming, and all of that, and then us actually being on the NX-01 is such a fertile ground, like it's a fertile playground of storytelling. And this episode, I think, it shows just the way in which, you know, if you really wanted to do a show in Star Trek that's more grounded, a little bit more gritty, and a lot closer to home, I think the story of making it from Warp 1 to Warp 5 is a fantastic story, because it would have been full of these kind of pitfalls, right? And the way in which, you know, this story especially references the idea of the right stuff, which if anybody's read that book by Tom Wolfe, it's phenomenal. So I highly recommend it to anyone. The movie is also great as well. And so both of those do such a great job of chronicling what it was like for humans to try and, you know, break the sound barrier as we were trying to make our way into space against the Russians. So all of this, I think, you know, every time I rewatch this episode, I'm just reminded of the short-sightedness, I think, of TV executives at the time. Because to me, this is absolutely the type of show that could be a huge success, I think, on Paramount Plus or that type of place, where we're going back and we're telling that story because it truly is interesting. And I think that struggle is the thing that is so inspiring, right? To overcome these type of odds and difficulties and losses and all of that stuff. I mean, what could be more inspiring to see? And to do it in a way that, you know, Star Trek always helps us kind of see ourselves where we are, but also where we could go. And so, I mean, that part alone makes this, I think, one of the, I don't think I'm spoiling because I think I've said this before, but absolutely one of the best episodes of this entire series. If not just this, to me, is one of my favorite episodes of all of Star Trek, actually.
And that's not just because Ruby's in it.
No, it's really not. Although that's a huge plus. It's, I think what it is because, you know, like those standouts that you'd get in every series, you know, like a Yesterday's Enterprise or Trials and Tribulations to something like Far Beyond the Stars. There's every series seems to have those episodes that they just find a way of hooking you into the human adventure. And I think this episode is one that truly does that by showing the immense amount of struggle that it was for humans to get from Warp 1 to Warp 5.
Yeah, I agree. And it's always been one of my favorites as well. I love the background that we get, the way the story is told, the way that it's easier for us to relate to what's going on in the story with the characters. And I've also, we've talked about this episode a number of times over the years here on the network, probably previously here on Warp 5, if you go way back. Also, The Ready Room, we've done an episode on it, I'm pretty sure. And I've always felt, like you said, that it would have been a great premise for season one if they had been able to follow through and have that entire season be the build-up to the launch of the Enterprise. However, I do think that in 2001, I think that audiences may not, Star Trek fans may not have been ready to accept that as a Star Trek show, even less than they were ready to accept, or they did accept the Enterprise that we got because it felt kind of different. So I'm not sure if I completely feel that the executives were in the wrong, the studio was in the wrong by saying, hey, we don't want to go in that direction. We want it to be more space-like. I don't know. Just looking back, I think that it's possible that the show would not have even gotten to 4 years if they had gone down that path, even though it would have been very, very interesting for me as a viewer. But if you fast forward to today, like you say, with Paramount Plus, we've got all these streaming services, it would be a wonderful premise for a series, especially when you're doing 10 episodes per season. If you do, even if you only do one season, like these Star Wars shows that they're doing, like the Obi-Wan, for example, which was how many? That was only like 6 episodes, wasn't it? Yeah, but you've got these that are like 6, 8, something like that. It could work. And it could even work as a multi-season show of 10 episodes each in today's environment, I feel, because I think audiences are more receptive to this type of filling in the blanks in a format that doesn't quite feel like, in this case, Star Trek. You know, it's not Picard season 3. It doesn't look like the 24th century. And people would be more accepting of that. And I also think shows like For All Mankind have really laid the groundwork for telling that right stuff story in a way that is very engaging. I would love to see For All Mankind done in the Star Trek universe, where we really get to see how the program was built.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with what you're saying in the sense that I think that the executives were short-sighted in the sense that what they wanted was just more of the same, but different.
Yeah.
And right. I think possibly that, you know, audiences might not necessarily have been ready for that. But I also think that we didn't really give them a chance to do that either, right? And
right.
So I think that's the thing that really is interesting to me is that, you know, you could have really challenged people. And I think that's the thing that is interesting about this is that this would have allowed you to truly live up to this, what you said this show was about, which is, you know, we want it to be different than all of the other shows we've done and truly kind of build towards the places where the technology we know is what we become just used to every day. And so I think that's the thing that would have allowed this to be really interesting because, again, if you had spent kind of a whole first season where maybe you do a time jump in there one or two times that allows you to kind of follow these characters, you know, I think it would have been really, really fascinating. And two, I think this is a place where this show would have had to have a lot more forethought because, you know, you think of characters that we meet, say, in like season 4 of Erica Hernandez, who becomes the captain of the NX-02. You would have possibly been able to meet those characters, right? Who would have been younger members of Starfleet at that point. And so I think all of this is, you know, I'm not bashing them for not doing this idea or anything. It's just one of those things where in hindsight, it's 2020, of course, and I think this would have been a phenomenal series and really interesting. But I'm glad that we got this episode in the first place. You know, when I watched this episode, this may be one of the episodes of Star Trek I've seen more than maybe most others just because it's so stinking watchable because it's such a self-contained story for the character of Archer. And yet it does play into the larger whole, which, you know, one of the things, Chris, that we were kind of talking about on the other side of the bar here with Ruby was that this really does a great job, I think, this episode of showcasing how season 2 and season 1 have progressed the growth of the character of T'Pol. And there's that moment, of course, you know, at the very end where she says that we should name this the Robinson.
Yeah.
Nebula. And it's such a moving sequence. And you can even see it the way that Bakula plays that moment for him, which is he's surprised and at the same time extremely moved that she would make this suggestion. Mm-hmm. And it shows how much she's learned about human beings, their emotions, and the way that they deal with trauma that they face. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's a phenomenal way to do that because it's very subtle. And Jolene Blaylock just does not get enough credit for how good she is at playing this character.
Yeah.
And watching the series, as I have been with my wife, we're almost done now with season 4. But I'm just constantly reminded of how good she is and how much I kind of miss the fact that she's not in other things. She seems to have kind of left Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And, I'm sure it's better for her and her family and everything else. But she was, I think, a great actress, and it just does not get enough credit for how good she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a, especially in this episode, there's a gentleness to the way she plays a Vulcan.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. It's a great point.
That I think it works really well. And contrasting her, because this episode, the events take place about, what is it, like 7 years or so?
I think it's six to seven years. Yeah.
Before Broken Bow. And so we see the Vulcans here and the way they're behaving, their demeanor, their attitude towards humans. And then we think back to Broken Bow and T'Pol being there, and she was like that also at the beginning of the series. And so we get that contrast here, watching her in the shuttle pod talking to Archer, listening to his story, and then seeing those other Vulcans in the flashbacks. And it just provides a great visual contrast right there within the story of how much she has changed over the course of these two seasons.
No, I could not agree with you more. And I love you bringing up the way they do the juxtaposition between the Vulcans of that time period and who she is now. And, you know, I think you rightly call out the fact that she was exactly like them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she has become this person who has been able to find a way to basically put herself in humanity's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly begin to see things from their perspective. I think one of the beautiful moments there is when she's like, I find it hard to believe that you would have to be talked into. And, you know, because it shows how perceptive she is of the Archer that we get now. And I think that's the other piece of this story, which is so wonderful, is that this allows us to see, you know, we knew coming into the show, and we get told in the show, that this means so much to Archer because this is his father's engine. But to really see how much he's dedicated his life and really put his career on the line, even before getting Enterprise, to make sure that humanity can reach its goal. I think, you know, the beauty of this episode is that it shows why he's picked as the captain of the Enterprise, that he had all of the talents needed. And it's really AG that gives him that last piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And once he has that bit of Maverick in him, it allows him to be the number one pick. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the things that's great about the episode is that it makes you then reevaluate all of the ways in which Archer has acted throughout the series now.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so when I go back to Broken Bow and Archer is talking about knocking Vulcans on their ass, mm-hmm. like that just seems like something AG would have done.
I think he would.
Right?
He probably has done that before.
Exactly. So that's, again, I think this is the place where when Star Trek finds a way to tell incredible stories that are prequels of previous series, or even in them their own series, right? Doing that in a way that then accentuates everything that we've seen before and what comes after is a difficult job And yet, they absolutely do that in this episode. And I think mm-hmm. that's what makes it such a triumph, is that now I can go back and rewatch Enterprise with this in my mind and see how all of these events made him who he is, mm-hmm. and then move forward and watch how these events still continue to play out in who Archer is. And so I guess I've had some, you know, recent arguments, is because we've been talking about Strange New Worlds, and I'm thinking about, you know, the bumps in the road that writers mm-hmm. can create for themselves. And here, this is a prime example of how to absolutely avoid all of those traps and succeed on every single level. Mm-hmm. It just, to me, is astounding.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a great story for showing how someone needs to develop to be a leader. And Archer says this at the beginning, that if it weren't for AG, he wouldn't be out here now. And like you just said, it was the influence of AG that allowed Archer to develop himself and refine himself to really become a leader. There's that moment, which I really love in the dialogue, where T'Pol tells Archer that, "You said you guys were friends, but it sounds like your relationship was very adversarial." And Archer says, "You know, that's how humans are. We have a way of doing that, little healthy competition." But she tells him that AG did have a point. It does take more than piloting ability to command a starship. "Fortunately, you seem to have developed the necessary skills." And I like that line from T'Pol because, of course, it's true, but the fact that she would say that in the first place shows how far she has come, like we were discussing a moment ago, and how much she respects Archer now compared with that first meeting that we saw in Broken Bow. But whether you're the captain of a starship or the president of a company or just the manager of a department, it's not enough to be good at some particular task that you specialize in, right? You have to have people skills. You have to understand how to communicate. You have to be able to adapt to situations, change your approach depending on what is happening with a particular person or situation. And that's something that we see Archer doing throughout the series, and increasingly so as we move towards the end of season two. And if it weren't for this competition for the captaincy that he had with AG, and if it hadn't been for AG encouraging him to bend the rules from time to time and take a risk and stand up for what he believed in, yeah, he probably would not be here. He probably wouldn't be the captain of the Enterprise. And if he were, he wouldn't have the crew that he has that work together. It would be more like a Jellicoe situation, perhaps. And I know there are plenty of people who will defend Jellicoe, but I think on The Next Generation, when Jellicoe comes in and you see how the crew functions around him compared with how they function around Jean-Luc Picard, you can see how leadership styles really do matter and how some people develop them well and some people don't. And back to this story, it's thanks to the events that we see in the NX program and AG that we get the Archer that we have.
Yeah, I think that there's something really beautiful about what you just said, because this really kind of brings me back to the proverb, you know, iron sharpens iron. And I think that it's that adversity that helps make us who we are. Mm-hmm. We talked about that in our Saddle Up episode about the need for our pain, right? And Kirk is right. We need our pain. We need our struggle. We need our adversity, because it's what allows us to overcome and become the better versions of ourselves. It's one of the unfortunate hallmarks of humanity, is that we need that, right? Because we're so thick-headed and stubborn most of the time that not anything else will get through other than some good old adversity. And so, you know, both AG and Archer being that for one another, I think is a really special thing. But I think on top of that, we see that Archer grows in the ability to be challenged, but then help inspire people to overcome. You know, I mean, he's willing to listen to a lieutenant that mm-hmm. he doesn't even know, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the thing that bonds him and Trip and gives them the relationship now that they have.
Well, how could you not listen to someone with that much charm in their voice, Matthew?
I don't know. I mean, Chris, don't you just want to listen to me all day now? I mean, come on. Just keep your shirt on, Lieutenant. So I do think that that is something that is incredibly interesting about them really doing. Again, they do such a good job of laying out all of the qualifications that Archer already had to be captain in this episode. But then they allow us to see the growth that he experiences, even in this episode, for the reasons that he will become captain. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. And I love the fact that, you know, our introduction to Trip Tucker is this, because it does do such a wonderful job of explaining why these two men are so close. Because without Trip, Archer would have been up a creek without a warp core, mm-hmm. you know, and they wouldn't have been out there. And so it's the working of these men together to overcome this that really makes all this possible. So to me, this also adds to my reason for really enjoying the character of Trip Tucker, because he's introduced in such a classic Trip way where he kind of butts himself into a conversation, mm-hmm.
yeah.
but he actually really has the ability to help somebody here mm-hmm. and to help in general.
Yeah, the ability and the desire. I feel like we talked about this on a discussion a long time ago about Trip Tucker, but yeah, it's the charm, it's the intelligence, it's the easygoing nature and the desire to help that all rolled up together really make Trip Tucker a very approachable character. But the way he's introduced, yeah, like you said, it's just perfect. There are so many ways that we could meet a character for the first time. But this is a case where I think they introduce us to a character in a flashback in a way that's just 100% true to who that character is and explains. You can think. So, okay, for example, in Broken Bow, it's explained to us why Archer wants Hoshi on the ship. And we get to see her teaching class, and we get this background and how many languages she speaks, and he has to talk her into it. And there's this whole long thing that goes on to get her onto the ship. But why did he choose Trip Tucker? Well, it's explained here in just like that. Just a moment. You understand exactly why he chose Trip Tucker to be his engineer later when when the Enterprise launched. So I think it's a great little bit of storytelling.
Well, and I also think that by doing this whole story, we're really able to also chip away again at the Vulcan Science Directorate and their inability to think outside the box. And I actually really love that, because this is just one more place where they are proven wrong, and mm-hmm. it's humans' curiosity and that emotion of curiosity which mm-hmm. allows them to be able to disprove again something that Vulcans thought was impossible. Mm-hmm. And that open-mindedness. And I think that's this. It's just one more place where this, you know, because my wife and I just finished watching the Vulcan Reformation arc mm-hmm. In season 4, you're seeing how, like we talked about so many times on Deep Space Nine, you leave these little breadcrumbs of information that then they really bring to fruition in a story like that to explain, okay, this is why the Vulcans are the way they are here. Because from our experience, we don't really know Vulcans to be so pig-headed.
Right.
And so I, you know, and which is weird because they're not Tellarites. So I just think that's another really wonderful small part of this episode that continues to build, you know, throughout this series until you get to season four and they finally reveal exactly what's been going on and why. And it makes for an incredibly interesting story.
Hmm. Yeah. And we also should talk about the 602 Club just a little bit, because we were joking at the beginning about being in the 602 Club. But this is the, I believe it is the first time we actually spend time in the 602 Club and really spend time with Ruby. We got to hear about Ruby from Malcolm and Trip, and especially Malcolm in Shuttle Pod 1. But yeah, your podcast, the 602 Club here on the network, the name comes right from here. And the original logo for your podcast was the logo that's hanging in the bar here.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I always, when we decided to redo an older show and give it a new name and everything, I was immediately struck by the idea of using the 602 Club as the theme. And the reason was is because it had a tie to our, obviously, our network being so Star Trek based, and yet felt like the perfect way to honor that and also branch out. And I love the 602 Club. Its introduction into Star Trek Enterprise, I think, is really awesome. And this is one of the things that actually makes me a little bit sad, you know, that this was an entire season of the show, because this place feels like a 10 forward type of place where people get to relax, because that's exactly what it is. It's a bar, you know, and to be able to have that place, I think, is a lot of fun to be able to explore then character stories and conversations that are, you know, when you're, of course, stuck on the NX-01. It's a tiny ship, and even the mess hall, you know, doesn't have this type of feel, because it's just where people are eating food. They're not going to sit down and have a drink, right?
And also, I got to say, Ruby, much more attractive than Chef.
So true. It's so true. especially since apparently Chef looks like Jonathan Frakes. Yeah. So I'm just kidding. Jonathan Frakes is a gorgeous man, but
I'm just picturing, though, if someone decided to recreate the 602 Club up in the catwalk.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Put a little grill up there and everything, you know.
Well, there is precedent for grilling in the catwalk. So, yeah.
It's true. you could serve some warp core dogs and, you know.
Yeah.
This is one of those places where I just feel like Enterprise had so many great ideas, right? And as my wife and I are almost finished with the show, I'm lamenting that it ends with season four, because there's so much material that could be done here. And man, I just, you know, I'm completely struck by how good of a prequel series this really was, because it's one that found a way, I think, to accentuate canon without detracting from it. And that's exactly what you want to do when you're making this type of series. So,
well, one new thing that I noticed this time after watching First Flight, I don't know how many dozens of times over the years, is how similar the plot of the story is to the opening of Top Gun Maverick.
That's true. Maybe they were watching, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
That's where they got it from. Yeah, so
you've got the pilot who's going to push the plane past the limit it's supposed to go. He's ignoring orders, ends up crashing the plane, stole the plane in the first place. I mean, some Star Trek inspiration in Top Gun, no doubt. But it makes perfect sense, because you got the bar as well in the Top Gun. So
yes, yeah, maybe who knows, that you've got a fan of Star Trek Enterprise and Christopher McQuarrie. So could be.
All right, well, I think we've covered this episode pretty thoroughly. Any final thoughts? What's your rating for this one?
I mean, I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that this is a clear 5 out of 5 for me. I mean, I can't imagine anything you could do to this episode to make it better other than the fact of what we talked about. It would have been great if this was like half the season. I loved spending time with all these characters. I thought Kevin Carradine playing A.G. Robinson was just fantastic. The introduction, of course, of Trip here and Ruby, getting to spend more time with Admiral Forrest. You know, I think Admiral Forrest becomes a much more interesting character just because of this episode, mm-hmm. in the way in which we've seen him admit to them dealing with the Vulcans is very difficult, and he's been doing it for a long time, mm-hmm. and it leaves him just as frustrated as it leaves them. And so all of these things, this is a clear 5 out of 5 Trip's wonderful Vulcan disproving charges, because it's just, I mean, it's phenomenal in every way. I love it. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I don't have any more to add, really, other than, like you, I love the episode. It's always been one of my favorites of Enterprise and of Star Trek, and I always enjoy rewatching it, and I'm going to give it 10 Chagrin the Vulcans.
Nice. I like that.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on First Flight. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It is a closed group. It's there to be an extension of the conversations that we have here on the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll see a post on the timeline for this episode of Warp 5, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there and continue the conversation. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if you'd like to help us keep Warp 5, keep our Enterprise rewatch and everything else that we're doing on the network going, all that fun in the 602 Club, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. It does take a great deal of money to produce and distribute these podcasts, and we send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us now, and if you're not, we hope that you will consider doing so. Maybe Ruby will even give you a beer. Now, Matthew, when you're not preparing for your next barroom brawl, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, I'm trying to figure out Threads, some new social media thing. I don't know. But you can find me there as well as Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network in the 602 Club talking about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek that we love. We just covered the latest Indiana Jones film. We've got so many films coming out this summer. I hope you'll check out our show. It's a blast. You know, if you love the 602 Club in this episode, just wait till you hear the 602 Club here on TFM. You can also find me doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I are doing a 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Deep Space Nine on the Orb. We've got our discussions of Star Trek Picard over on the Artificial Tango. And of course, you can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network. There are two shows there. One is all about Harry Potter, one chapter at a time. That's called Owlposts. You can also find me on Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills as we talk about Star Wars. But Chris, where can people find you when you're not trying to, you know, order up some of those fried mushrooms from the 602 Club?
Well, the 602 Club has the best fried mushrooms on Earth, in fact. So
it's true. It is true.
Definitely want some of those. And I hear Chef stole the recipe, so you can get them in the future as well. Aboard the NX-01. But when I'm not stuffing my face with fried mushrooms, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing those shows that you and I do together. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. You can find me in many episodes of many shows in the back catalog. So tune in if you want to hear all the various discussions we've been having here for the past, 13, almost 14 years now. Lots of Star Trek talk for you here on TFM. And if you'd like to chat with me about Star Trek or whatever, you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is still where I'm most active, but you can find me all over the place, also on Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, and whatever they launch tomorrow, because there's always a new social network popping up. So I'd love to hear from you over there. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to our next discussion, and I just hope that we can manage the bounty.
Well, Chris, it sounds a little bit dangerous, but let's go.